south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, you're having a nasty spell with your big hurricanes, and we've had some monster earthquakes down here. So which is worse, and which would you rather have or not have? As for big earthquakes, in the last year or two anyway, we've had three very unusual. I'm talking about Mexico and Central America now. My preferred stomping grounds, at least for the time being. The fact is, it's been common knowledge in most Latin American earthquake zones, that's most of Central and South America, Mexico too. By the way, I'll repeat this again, Mexico is not Central America, it's North America. Look it up, you'll see it's true. I don't know why people think Central America. Well, I guess I do know why. You were asleep or partying that day in 11th grade geography class. Anyway, it's always been said that in earthquake zones in Central and South America, the big ones come along about every 25 years. That'd be anything over a 6-pointer on the Richter scale. However, in the last year or two, they've been coming with much greater frequency than that. Take that huge 8.2 earthquake that just happened in Mexico about a week ago. Any 8-pointer is massive, and the last one Mexico had was 100 years ago. But globally, there's an 8-pointer somewhere on the planet about every year. You might remember a couple years ago, Chile had an 8-pointer. And those things are massively destructive. Even so, if your house or where you're living is built to anti-seismic standards, there'll certainly be a lot of shake, rattle, and roll, and it'll scare the crap out of you and the dogs. But the building will survive, though certainly a lot of your plates, glasses, and knickknacks won't. So anyway, just the other day when that big 8-pointer hit Mexico, everybody, and I mean everybody in Central America, felt it too. I sure felt it. It lasted around a minute and a half. Whereas the last big 6 and 7-pointer I was in lasted only about 30 seconds. That's the difference between a 6, 7, and an 8. Not to mention, the larger the earthquake, the bigger and more frequent the aftershocks. And there were plenty after that big 8-pointer. Now, you probably saw in the news that there was terrible damage done in Mexico. But keep this in mind, Mexico hasn't had a huge one like that for 100 years. So it's been estimated that about 95% or more of all the destruction happened to homes, businesses, and infrastructure that were constructed before around 1970, with a high percentage of the damaged structures built on the sides of hills and mountains and valleys. In other words, many of them were precariously perched well before builders and contractors started routinely building anti-seismic, earthquake-resistant structures. Now, before the 60s and 70s, not that they didn't make nice, strong, solid buildings, it's just that there was no consistency. There were just as many buildings that were rock-solid as paper-thin junk. And you know, I was checking out the destruction on the 6 o'clock news myself. And on Mexican TV stations, it just wasn't the 6 o'clock news. It was 24/7. It was a huge event. I noticed, and it was easy to see if you knew what you were looking for. In most all cases, when they showed a pile of rubble, I was not seeing rebar reinforced concrete. I was seeing age-old, even ancient, adobe-style construction. And you know, throughout Latin America and many parts of the world, adobe block construction has been and even is now the material of choice for the lower classes, poor and very poor. Why? Because it's basically sun-dried mud. No cement or rebar reinforcement at all. Just mud, water, clay, and some hay mixed in as sort of an organic rebar. And by the way, many thousands more very weak structures made out of a low-fired kind of terracotta brick. They're set in mortar, but no metal rebar. That's why when a big shaker hits, that stuff cracks and crumbles. And since there are many poor and lower-middle-class neighborhoods made exclusively of that material, that's where most of the damage is done and what you see on the 6 o'clock news, especially in very old, lower-class neighborhoods and many of the rustic neighborhoods way out in the boonies. Naturally, those are the sites the news teams are going to focus in on when they're doing their reports, and that's what you're going to get to see on the nightly news up in the States because that's the most dramatic. Now, that's not to say if you're living in a fairly modern, nicely built, anti-seismic structure, there'll be no visible or structural damage at all, especially when you're talking about a 6, 7, or an 8. The truth is, if you're going to live down here, you have to get used to cracks in concrete and occasional fissures in streets and sidewalks that could swallow you if you're not paying attention. I know you've got your share of sidewalk, cement wall, and garage slab cracks up where you live, too. People say it's from the foundation settling, right? Well, down here, it's from that and the occasional earthquake. In fact, I remember a few cases of my friends building new houses up in Chicago, and unfortunately, once in a while, cracks in the basement wall or driveway would appear in a year or two, and the owners would get really pissed off. The next thing you know, they're calling up the contractor and bitching, come and fix this or I'm going to sue you. Well, down here, when that happens, and it will, there's no one to sue, and if you did go to court, the judge would laugh at you. So that means down here, driveways, patios, and walkways around your property will also develop various fissures and cracks, and you just have to put up with that stuff. However, when a crack becomes a fissure, your gringo sensibilities will get the best of you, and you'll probably call up a contractor, have him bust out the slab, and put in a new one. However, you're not down here to let the small stuff drive you crazy, so look out for that. So anyway, southern Mexico got hit very hard. Lots of damage. That means there'll be thousands and thousands of construction jobs, etc., for deported illegal alien Mexicans. Silver lining? You be the judge. What happens next? Well, during the rebuild, they'll be making those structures anti-seismic. So the next time they have a big shaker, hopefully many years from now, fingers crossed and wishful thinking, there'll be few lives lost and very little structural damage. That's the pattern here in Latin America. For example, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Chile, and El Salvador all had big 6 and 7 point earthquakes in the last 20 or so years. And in those countries, pretty much everyone 30 or 35 years and older remembers those events well. So in those countries, the big reset button was hit 20 or so years ago. They had their crappy construction wake-up call, and nobody wants to go through that again. They've all rebuilt into much safer and more modern standards, even in many, but not all, of the very poor districts. Which is why, in just the last year, when Guatemala was hit with a 6.5 and a 7.2, very few structures crumbled and only 3 or 4 people died. Whereas, when the last really big one hit, I think it was in 1986, whole neighborhoods were wiped out and a couple hundred people died. Yep, earthquakes are nasty, but they tend to clear the playing field of badly built structures. And they scare the hell out of people in the process, so when they rebuild, they definitely up their standards because they don't want to go through that again. And that's just what happened in Mexico. They haven't had a big earthquake for 100 years. No one alive even remembers the last big one. So as the lower middle class and poor populations grew, they expanded haphazardly with cheap and crappy materials on very cheap land, in many instances, unsuited for building. And though zoning laws do exist, even in the lower middle class and very poor areas, they're rarely enforced and people often just build without permits or any kind of oversight. But I can guarantee in a year or two when those places have been cleared and rebuilt, there'll be a lot more concrete and rebar and thus safer when the next big one rolls through. And you know, what's always surprising to me is big high-rise commercial buildings and residential towers never seem to come tumbling down, even though when you stare up at them, they look pretty fragile. That's because specialty international construction companies come in and put those things up. They strictly follow international construction guidelines. Though local companies could do some of the finish work, it's the big transnationals that do the heavy lifting. That said, there are lots of 10, 20, 30, even 40-story high-rises in earthquake zones. And you know, every time I'm in one of those buildings, I'm thinking, I'd never want to be in one of these during an earthquake. Yet some people live and or work in those things 8 hours a day. And even though you never hear of them being damaged, personally, I'd never want to live in one myself. In fact, I prefer and feel much safer in a fairly modern 2, at max, 3-story building. But that's just me. By the way, I was once in a very high-rise building in Japan, and in the lobby, there was a scale model of it, and I noticed here this 70 or 80-story building was designed to sit on some fantastically giant rubber grommets and underground shock absorbers and springs. Man, if that didn't scare the hell out of me. Talk about blind faith, huh? But then again, those are the guys that saved the planet from Godzilla. What is it, 4 times now? By the way, I know a number of gringos and expats who live in high-rise towers. I have to check in with them to see how they fared during the big one last week. I haven't heard from them. I guess so far so good. All right, enough said about that, except to say, when you move here to Latin America, earthquakes are pretty much a fact of life. And hurricanes? Not so much unless you live on the Caribbean coast. But even then, you could build your house to withstand any hurricane. In fact, looking at the news lately, when I see the damage done, especially in the Caribbean islands, again, you see it's the poorly constructed bamboo, laminate, and thatched roof structures that end up being piles of rubble. The one mistake I see so many people make, even wealthy people living in the islands, they make a nice solid cement concrete rebar structure, and they top it off with a very light and breezy bamboo wood metal laminate or thatched roof. Sure, they look nice and keep with the tropical theme, but when a hurricane comes through, there goes the roof and everything inside gets ruined. But even so, if you're well protected with a concrete roof, there's always a chance that an uprooted coconut palm will come sailing through your kitchen. Yep, that's happened to me. Regarding beach properties, gringos and expats love anything near a beach. You have to understand that sometime or another, you're liable to get flooded out. The good news is no one puts basements in houses on the beach or pretty much anywhere in Latin America. So, if and when you end up with ocean water in the kitchen or living room, we're talking about cement, tile, and concrete structures here, so no real damage done, except perhaps to your belongings and furniture. Many times it's just a matter of repainting when the thing dries out. Oh, by the way, talking about driving a point home, you longtime listeners will remember I've always poo-pooed the idea of having carpets and rugs in any house here in Latin America. Number one, for the bugs and humidity. Number two, if there's any water damage at all, especially salt water from the coast, you can kiss your carpets goodbye. There's no way of bringing them back. Remember, it's salt water we're talking about. I know, up in the States, you've got wall-to-wall carpeting, especially up in those cold climes. You're used to it, feels good on the bare feet and all that. Nevertheless, not recommended at all here in Latin America. Sure, there are plenty of carpet outlets and such. You can go nuts and get any style or brand name you want. Besides, with all the fantastic and incredibly cheap tile you can get down here, as well as the beautiful hardwood flooring and trim, why carpeting? However, and predictably, many of the upscale Latin gringo wannabes that I know have installed wall-to-wall carpeting. Why? Because it's the gringo thing to do. Everyone's got it up in the States. Oh, and one last thing about carpets and rugs. That's not to say you can't have the odd, nice, artistically tasteful throw rug here and there. You know, something nice under your dining room or coffee table. At least then, if you're expecting a hurricane, you can roll it up and shove it in the closet. But really, do yourself a favor and skip the wall-to-wall carpeting. Oh, and here's another mistake I see a lot of upscale Latins make and gringos too when they're looking for a beach house. There's one simple thing you should always do whether you're buying an existing beach house or building. Always ask the neighbors, especially the old-time gardeners and guys with their machetes, the old-timers who've lived there all their lives, ask them to point out the worst-case high tide or storm scenario and have them point out on your property or the property you're thinking about buying and building on the farthest point inland where they've seen the water creep up. Not the average high tide line. Everybody knows that. I'm talking about the worst-case high water line. Then when building your house, unless it's going to be on concrete stilts and a lot of them are, you know, build it at least 50 feet inland from the ultimate high water point. Or do as some smart gringos have done. Bring in the earth movers and do a little terraforming and give yourself some artificial high land to build on. Now, I know when North Americans think about floodplains, all they do is go down to the local municipality and ask for the topographic map laying out the 50 and 100 year floodplains. However, in Latin America, you're just not going to find maps and data like that. If you go down to a Latin American municipality and ask them for a 20 and 50 year floodplain map, they're just going to look at you, nod, smile a bit, and probably be thinking, what's that crazy gringo on about? So it's buyer beware, and you have to investigate that stuff yourself. However, your builder or your architect will build your house or whatever anywhere you want on your own land. You're the boss, you're writing the checks or forking out the cash, so they're not going to argue with you, even if you've picked a difficult, inconvenient, or perhaps real dumbass spot to break ground. Bottom line, you have to do your own investigation about such things, and if you don't speak Spanish, well, pay someone who does to do it. All right, moving on. Looks like I've got an email here from Doug D. Looks like it's reasons 2460 through 70 to get the hell out of the U.S. He says, hey, Johnny was traveling to London today, and I exchanged a small amount of money so I'd have money for taxis, etc. when I land. Went to one of those cambio booths, a money exchange place at the airport. Once there, I was required to allow them to scan my passport to exchange more than $100 US. Yes, I know the exchange rate at airports is a ripoff, but this was a last-minute trip for work and I had to do it. I asked them why they had to scan my passport to change a measly $100. They said it was now required for everyone leaving the U.S. I asked, required by whom? The lady looked at me sort of sheepishly and said, why the U.S. government? So, Johnny, can you think of any reason they would need to know about little old me and my measly $100? Love your show. Thanks for the information you share. Best, Doug. Well, Doug, I do know the primary reason they need to know every little thing about you and every other U.S. citizen. The U.S. government does need to keep tabs on all its sheep. They want to know exactly where we are, and they don't want any one of us to escape at fleecing time. I know it was a rhetorical question, and you knew the answer already. Meanwhile, the greater majority of people out there don't want to hear or think about it and have a hard enough time just plugging away on their treadmill. Of course, most people listening to the show right now are actually thinking about jumping off that treadmill, right? And Doug's little example there is just another reason why you should be engaging that plan before it's too late. Now, most of you, even if you've got a plan B in action or are thinking about it, have never really been thinking about the worst case scenario. But in the last couple of weeks, with these massive hurricanes and millions without power and water, putting together a little bug out bag and heading for the boonies just ain't gonna cut it. You know that. Have you seen the photos of those gigantic traffic jams heading out of the city? That's what you have to look forward to. And worse. Look, we're not just talking about natural disasters here either. How about massive unnatural disasters like that Equifax debacle? You might think it's nothing now, but just wait till someone steals your identity. That's what that hack's all about, you know. Well, thankfully, because of the extreme lag time here in Latin America, if you're living down here, there are no such credit bureaus or credit scoring companies. Down here, if you're going for a loan or trying to get a credit card, since there are no real credit checks outside of individual banks, you'll have to build up your credit profile in a step-by-step process. Or do like so many of us expats do, just pay cash. I mean, really, who needs credit? What you need is a sponsor, a reference. That'll be your Latin lawyer. He'll sign as what they call a fiador when you rent an apartment, or apply for an internet or a cell phone contract, whatever. Without him or someone from his office signing as a reference, especially if you don't know Spanish, you're not going to get too far. However, you might need a credit card, but once you've got a bank account down here, you immediately get a debit card. And if that's not enough for you, you can apply for a real MasterCard Visa credit card, but your credit limit will come in tiny steps too. For example, as for Latin Americans, first they'll get a debit card. Then after 6 months or a year or two, they'll apply at the same bank for a credit card, Visa, MasterCard, whatever. They'll have to give up the usual personal information, where they work, how much money they make, letters of reference and recommendation from a professional, lawyer and such. Then they'll get that Visa or MasterCard. But get this, almost always they'll start out with a pitifully low maximum. Like, for example, $200. Now, I know some gringos up in the States, you do too, who have $50,000 credit card limits, you know, American Express, platinum cards and all that. Can you even imagine having a $200 credit limit? Then after 6 months or a year, if you've been a good boy or girl, paid on time, etc. And all that entails these days, you know, is to pay the minimum monthly payment. That's what they'd prefer, you know, because then you never pay it off, right? Been there? Hope not. Then, if a Latin person with a $200 limit hasn't been too much of a deadbeat, they'll raise that credit limit to $500. Then maybe a year later to $1,000, and then on and on until he hits that magic number, $2,000 credit limit. And that, for many Latin people, is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Can you guess why? Because that's what the U.S. Embassy or Consulate in any Latin country requires you to show them when applying for a legal tourist visa to the States. In actuality, it's a pretty good qualifier. Shows you've been working steady, making decent enough money to get a credit card, and that you're a good payer, and your bank considers you a good risk. In other words, there's a very slim chance on that trip to Miami or Disney World that you're going to overstay your visa and remain in the States illegally. By the way, it's been estimated that less than 5% of adult Latin American people have a credit card, not debit card, with the $2,000 maximum or better. meaning less than 5% of Latin American adults qualify for a legal U.S. tourist visa. Bottom line, here in Latin America, they have no national or international credit bureaus or agencies to check people out. And considering the Equifax bombshell up in the States, that's a very good thing. Which begs the question, how's that Plan B coming along? For you new listeners, that Plan B being, of course, an insurance policy when the reset button is hit up in the States. So how much time is left? How much breathing space do you have before that happens? I don't know, but people a lot smarter than I am are saying the cliff is right up around the bend. And for millions who took the brunt of those big hurricanes, the reset button has already been pushed. At minimum, it's been a huge wake-up call for them anyway. Oh, I bet right now all those tens of thousands of people sleeping it off in army cots, in high school gymnasiums, in makeshift dormitories, surely wish they would have had a Plan B. Of course, I'm recommending Latin America as your ultimate destination for your Plan B. And the easiest, fastest, and best way to do that is to come down to my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. And remember, only a maximum of 25 people allowed. So come on down, get some boots on the ground, get ready to drink from the fire hose. That's how people describe it. Another way to put it is, if you want a 2 to 5 year running head start on how to live, work, play, and or retire here in Latin America, join me and my crew at my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. You can get all the info and sign-up details at thenewexpat.com. Don't forget to check out the early bird sign-up discounts. And for all you past seminar attendees, remember, you get a $1,000 discount as a repeat offender. By the way, some attendees have repeated 3 times already. That says volumes, doesn't it? And if you just can't make it down to my January seminar, the next best thing to get those ducks lined up for your own Plan B is to take my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. You can check out my free introductory video by going to expatplanb.com. Now, if you're along the way in your own Plan B and need some help hashing it out, just go to thenewexpat.com and download my free phone consultation form. Look it over. It'll definitely give you some good ideas. Oh, and I almost forgot. If you sign up for my January seminar, you get a free 1-hour one-on-one phone consultation with me. All right, moving on, but continuing with the subject of earthquakes and natural disasters, I've got this hot off the presses, an email from expat Frank. Starts out, Don Johnny, my chiropractor, is at it again. I think he's off base on this subject too. But it's something I'd hate for him to be right about. He thinks that every time there's an earthquake, you should run outside in case the roof collapses in your casa. Several things fell off the shelves for him during this last one we had just the other day. By the way, I should tell you that Frank lives in and around Antigua, Guatemala, a golden little gem, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, a place we'll be visiting for a couple days on my Expat Insider Seminar. Anyway, Frank says, if my apartment is not reinforced with rebar, it must be the next best thing because I've never even had a hairline crack in the 3 years I've been living here. Although the other apartment I inhabited before this one did have a couple of hairline cracks. As for my very solid present apartment, the only way anything falls off my nightstand is if I push it off while looking for something else. Then he says, I had an electrician out one time to see if my electrical outlets were grounded. He checked the entire electrical system and said the wiring was up to U.S. standards and that everything was well grounded too. Then he says, Johnny, it may be a great leap to think this, but if the wiring is that good, up to first world standards, then the rest of my casa must be extraordinary, by Guatemalan or Latin standards at least. Personally, since there was a relatively minimal amount of shaking the last couple of earthquakes, so as far as I'm concerned, I see no reason to go running out in the yard in the middle of the night. And in the cold too, because it does get cold here sometimes in Antigua. At nights, sometimes down into the 50s. So Johnny, am I nuts or logically well grounded on these points? Sincere thanks as always, Frank. All right, thanks for that, Frank. All right, first let me mention to the listeners out there, Antigua, Guatemala is a city of around 25 to 30,000, about 5,500 feet above sea level, putting it smack dab in the middle of the Altiplano. That means the weather's nearly perfect all year round, except during the rainy season, when it rains a lot. So whereas daytime Altiplano weather is absolutely perfect, at nights it can get cold into the 50s sometimes. if you consider that to be cold. And I'm from Chicago, so it's plenty warm to me. Even so, almost no one resorts to an electric or gas heater, though some people use their fireplaces every so often. In the Altiplano, you'll find lots of fireplaces in upscale homes and apartments. Anyway, Frank, I assure you, your apartment walls are just loaded with rebar. Here in Latin America, you'll find all concrete and block structures are built that way. It's those brick and adobe structures that don't have it. However, only in the past maybe 50 years or so have rebar and concrete been standardized internationally for anti-seismic construction. So, not to worry. Any project that's been designed by a bona fide architect is going to be up to snuff in that respect. However, Latin builders are noted for cutting corners, so you have to be on the lookout for that. And the two things that contractors are most likely to skimp on? The Portland cement bag mix, which makes for weaker concrete, and reducing the rebar count. But even so, you can skimp a lot, and still, a structure will hold together quite well. So really, Frank, I guarantee you, your building has rebar in it. They don't build block and concrete structures anywhere in the world without rebar. That's part of the process and why cement blocks have holes in them to shove the rebar through. And you know, you can prove it to yourself by going to the hardware store and buying one of those stud detectors. On the other hand, every Latin guy thinks he's a stud, but this is a different thing altogether. Anyway, those electronic stud detectors will find studs, nails, wires, and rebar. Now, Frank, the idea of running outside every time there's an earthquake, what's most recommended is to just stand under a door frame. Don't run outside. Standing under a door frame is your safest bet. By the way, the reason why a roof is usually the weakest link is because, here in Latin America anyway, although the floors, the walls, the foundations and such are reinforced concrete, in a high percentage of houses, the roof is not. Instead, it's likely to be a mix of wood trusses or fiberglass panels, even galvanized laminated sheets. Because roofs made that way are much cheaper than pouring and reinforcing a concrete roof. And even when there is a solid concrete roof, often it won't be very thick at all, only 2, maybe 3 inches. Whereas your concrete block walls are 6 or 8 inches thick. So even if you have a concrete roof, chances are it's only got about half the strength or even less than the walls and floor. But no matter how thick your concrete roof, it will have rebar in it. So even in a big shaker, the chances are it's not going to collapse on you. But still, my advice, get under that doorway.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.